All right, and welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I'm Chad Lee. I am your host, and with me I have Dale out on the East Coast, and up north we've got Chip, the delivery man. Unfortunately, Jim couldn't make it with us today, which is a shame because we're going to cover a couple things he's going to have wanted to talk about, but he just doesn't have the emotional and mental energy to handle this week. So we're going to flow on without him. Are you guys ready to pick up the pace here?
Absolutely. Let's go.
I am. I'm actually still kicking it in Oklahoma. So I'm still not at the North Coast officially.
That's right. You had just mentioned you were there. I forgot already. Yeah. So you are ultra Midwest right now. Yeah. So we're going to have a 3-man pod. So we're going to be zipping around here. And it is a big week. We got the Super Bowl coming up. We finally have our final two teams. And as the official podcast of the Cincinnati Bengals, we are all extraordinarily excited to be covering it. Right, guys?
Go Burrow.
Yeah, go Burrow. Hey, you know what's funny? So I'm in class. If you don't know, I'm in Oklahoma. It's a work-related class. And in Oklahoma, they don't have a pro team. So you know what they do is I asked the one guy, I was like, who are you going to root for? And he goes, Cincinnati. I said, boy, you said that really quick. Why is that? Because they got the most Oklahoma guys that I can name you. That would be Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine. So basically, they just picked
Oklahoma backfield.
Yeah, they just pick whoever has – and I know some Ohio State fans that will do that too. They just pick the – team that they could identify the most of their college players, and they're like, boom, there's my team.
Yeah, and I can kind of understand that. Just either the best story or the team that you don't hate, maybe. I could see Oklahoma people rooting against certain teams from Texas, maybe, if they happen to just hate Texas. But yeah, all right, well, I'm being facetious because I'm actually rooting for the Rams and have been for a couple years ever since my backup team, the Chargers, bailed on me. So fortunately, they're in there too. But unfortunately, most of my friends are going Bengals this year. And I feel a little bad because the Bengals haven't been there in a long time. And I do kind of get why people are on that bandwagon because it's just such a Cinderella story. But besides the fact that they're in our division and I don't want anyone else in our division doing well at anything, it's mostly just that I've been back in the Rams for a while, and it was borderline painful to hear the recent Odell Beckham news. But despite that, I would be weird to jump off that bandwagon now of all times. So
yeah, I guess I'm rooting for Cincinnati, and I'm with you 100%. I struggle to root for any divisional team. That being said, Burrow, I mean, the whole team is just too fun and likable. I saw a picture, I was scrolling through Twitter the other day, and it was Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Burrow's father in the parking lot hanging out together, smoking a cigar, and I melted, man. I'm like, dude, that's like the ultimate picture, man. You know how proud you got to be to have your dad sitting together smoking cigars out in the parking lot with the fan base? Those are two proud fathers right there. I mean, that's the goal, right? That's too cool.
Yeah, I mean, they're running the show with storylines right now and likability, which is super irritating. But hey, you guys remember when our team was likable for like 6 months?
That was a fun time a couple of years ago.
It was
I really thought it was the pre-shoulder
Baker Mayfield area.
I really thought our hard days of being bitter fans were gone then.
Yeah.
I was like, there's no way this could turn bad.
Yeah, I was thinking the pre Baker Mayfield shoulder surgery era was a good time.
I blame the Progressive commercials.
So do a lot of people.
Yeah, me too.
Yep. So we already got into one of the Super Bowl contenders, so we might as well hit that. Cincinnati overcame an 18-point deficit this weekend to beat the Chiefs in what I consider to be that team and their quarterback's first real show of, I don't want to say brilliance, but just, you know, greatness more than what has seemed like just a fluky kind of Cinderella team. This was the first match against a very legitimate Super Bowl contender, and I mean Super Bowl favorite. And, you know, I've gotten some flack for downplaying how they got there with the other teams in their division, including my own, crumbling. And some of the teams that they were very fortunate enough to come up against in the playoffs. But on both sides of the ball, they did enough to get it done this week. Are you guys on board with what they're doing right now?
That defense stepping up and having their best game of the year at that time to just, I mean, they almost blanked them in the second half of the game to just shut them out like that, to let the offense come back without letting the game get out of hand. Cause it very easily could have just been over after going into the half. The Chiefs not picking up points going into the half, and that defense showing up really in the second half of the game, which, I mean, I remember before the season, that was the reason why I just didn't think the Bengals were going to do anything this year. I thought their defense was just going to be so atrocious that it wouldn't matter and Burrow was going to get killed and they wouldn't stand a chance. And he definitely got killed, but their defense really showed out at just the biggest time of the year. I mean, they had beaten the Chiefs earlier, but yeah, I mean, to do it again, crazy. It still seems crazy that they're here. But.
Yeah, to beat the Kansas City Chiefs twice in January is a major statement. And to your point, I agree with everything you said there, Dale. The defense was my biggest concern for them. And well, not a concern, actually, what I was hoping we would take advantage of. But let me just say this. The guy, the defensive end, Sam Hubbard, who took that strip or played a really great defensive end game for Cincinnati. They took him in the draft. I don't know if you guys remember this. I texted you. I'm not trying to toot my own horn. But the year we took Chad Thomas, the defensive end, Sam Hubbard was still on the board, and I texted
you. That was your guy.
I texted you guys, and I was like, why did we pass on Sam Hubbard? And it's not just because I was a Buckeye honk, but it was also because Sam Hubbard was good for the Buckeyes. He was like that quietly good, overseeing defensive end that always made a play when you needed it. And sure enough, there he was.
That was pretty
funny. Yeah, so I'm glad you started there too, Dale, because I think that has been the overlooked story, which is sort of something that NFL fans are really, really great at. It's sort of been the overlooked story that the Bengals defense really, really improved every week of the season and is sort of peaking right now and sort of carried them through the first two games when the offense wasn't doing all that much. Now, the difference is the Bengals obviously stepped up on defense once again this week and sort of took over that overtime in something we'll get to again on the defensive front. The difference was, I think, this game, the offense also did their part to a little bit higher degree. And so the defense is the more surprising thing and the more underrated thing. But for the first time, their offense, which has been their highlight all year, looked a little bit more like their offense, which you absolutely need if you're going to beat even a somewhat struggling second half Chiefs team. And so it was more of a complete game from that group, I think. And that comes down to super playmakers, including obviously Ja'Marr Chase, but I think T. Higgins had a pretty monster game.
And he's really been showing out this year.
Yeah,
he gets overshadowed by Chase, but they really have a stud there in Higgins. And I mean, Chase is obvious, but Higgins does not get the notoriety that he deserves.
Yeah, and he had, I think, a bad drop somewhere early in the game, and he really, really came back in that game and made a couple really crucial catches. and they were able to come back from that. I think the big stories of the game to end that first half was the Chiefs not getting into the end zone. Some people think that had a giant impact on the energy they came out with in the second half. Do you guys think that's relevant or just sort of a story we create in retrospect?
Wait, you'd have to ask me that again. I was kind of zoning out.
I can go ahead there. So I would say I think that's probably just overhyped a little bit. I probably go back to us talking about the Chris Long thing where him saying some of that stuff just doesn't really – some of those things don't really carry over time-wise. And they have so much to do, those 20 minutes trying to get ready. I mean, they're going to go back out there and start back over. Even without getting the score there, if you're the Chiefs going into the half, you got to be happy. I mean,
you have a pretty big lead.
I mean, you looked like you could do whatever you wanted on offense. You were marching down the field. You had no issues at all scoring, except that there at the end, and you gave up one touchdown, and it was on like an almost 30-yard rush. Like, that can be a little fluky. So, like, I can't imagine they didn't go in anything but confident.
Yeah, I think the same thing. I thought that was kind of a story that you kind of come up with after the fact.
Right.
That they like don't looking do very well looking in the second back half.
Looking back, another touchdown would have been really helpful.
Even a field goal, even just to spike the ball and kick that field goal probably would have been pretty outstanding for them. So they came out in the second half. They were flat. I thought Mahomes looked weirdly out of character in the second half. I was almost waiting for this game to end and hear a story that he had gotten hurt and just wasn't, you know, he had hurt his shoulder because he was lofting the ball off. He was throwing high. He just kept trying to scramble in circles and couldn't get rid of it. And I was absolutely certain the game was going to end and they were going to say, by the way, Patrick Mahomes sprained his shoulder at the end of the first half or something. And that wasn't the case. The Bengals just got to him. And good on them for completing the game. Another super thriller of a game. Talk about playoff glory for the NFL. The last 2 weeks have been nothing but gold for this league.
Very much overshadowing the absolute garbage fest that was Wild Card Weekend.
Yeah.
And then just essentially putting up games that each one got better than the next. So I'm sure they're pretty happy about that, aside from everything happening today in the media.
So I don't have the box score in front of me. How did that scoring – do one of you guys have that open? How did that scoring play out? How did that score play out in the end of the third and beginning of the fourth quarter for the Bengals?
So at the end of the third –
looks like it went 11-0.
Yeah, so they came in to the second half, and the Chiefs did not come back and score until, let's see, we're in the fourth. They didn't score in the third at all, and then they didn't come back until, what was it, the field goal that they kicked in the fourth.
Man.
To get them there.
All right. Well,
so it, yeah, I mean, it was,
this went flat, you know,
they were quick. They were 2 minutes and under an hour.
I mean, sometimes when you got a lead like that in such an important game, sometimes when you have a big lead and you're feeling confident and then you have a half time to sit on it, it's not always good because then you come out a little bit, how do I say this? Like, I don't want to say lazy, but maybe flat. Not 100%. Yeah, flat. That's good. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, they came out flat and they couldn't turn it back on. Did any at some point? Obviously, they were going to, because I kept thinking the whole time, okay, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs offense are going to make Kelce or Hill or somebody's going to make a big play and it's just going to flip around for them. And it just didn't happen.
I did, because they would get one, right? So they'd run the seam route with Kelce and get 20 yards, and you're like, well, it seems like someone should cover him on that because he gets all of those. And then I couldn't tell how much if they were really taking him away or if they just what routes he was running. I really wasn't sure, but they had great coverage on Hill. And look, my feeling has been with them. Put all of your resources towards Kelce and Hill and just, I'm willing to die by paper cuts from Byron Pringle and Mecole Hardman. Like if that's how I lose the game or Chips Boy CEH running the ball, like, okay, then I'll that's how I'll go down. Fine.
I like how I traded him over a year ago and he's still my guy.
Yeah, you get Akers and Clyde Edwards-Helaire are your guys forever in our book.
Yeah, I still kept expecting them to come back because it only takes one play. I mean, Tyreek Hill waved goodbye at a guy who was like 5 yards in front of him with an angle in one of them. Like, that was one of the most disrespectful things, and it was absolutely glorious to watch. As you just like, oh, you're going to taunt the guy that should be tackling you in a half a second. So with them, it's always possible, especially because they were still ahead. I mean, the Bengals were still behind that whole, essentially the whole second half.
So can I take ask you guys a question? It's slightly off topic here, but the Browns are known for, we had a pretty good pass rush. And that's one of the things we used against Cincinnati Bengals that even with a healthy Joe Burrow, we pretty much, you know, decimated them. Well, my question is, the Los Angeles Rams have a very good pass rush in Aaron Donald and Von Miller and Leonard Floyd. My question is, how do you think they're going to fare against this pass rush and how will it affect the game? Because to this point, I don't think they've played a pass rush that strong.
Yeah, I think that this will be a very different matchup for them than the Chiefs. And I think you're right. You just brought up there. It's going to be something they have to scheme against. And the only thing that should be making them nervous is, are they going to be able to protect Joe Burrow at all? Or is it going to look a little bit like the Titans game, where that defensive front went right after him? But the difference is the Rams also can score, and the Titans threw the ball more to the Bengals than to their own receivers. So
I really wish I could remember the stat where I think Burrow got sacked in that game like 8 times or something against the Titans. And it was like less than 1% of it was some crazy number of times a team has won a game while giving up the amount of sacks that the Bengals did that day. Like and plus like turnover, like they didn't have any business winning that game with them giving those sacks up. Chip, it's a great point. Like I could see it being a shootout where we have something that's close at the end, like some of these games have been. I could see it also going the other way where Rams hit a couple big ones and like Burrow's limping like 6 minutes into the game and things are not going well. Like it has a pretty wide range of outcomes for me exactly because of that, Chip. Like if they get after them and they can, and if the Bengals line doesn't hold up, like, you're going to have a real bad time if you French fry when you're supposed to pizza. Like it's not going to be good.
Okay. So I got about 3 more points before we move on from the Bengals. We're covering them for a long time because this is the official podcast of the Cincinnati Bengals. So we're hitting them a little bit longer, but I think one thing I wanted to get to for sure was a take on Joe Burrow, because I think he had one of his better games of the playoffs, and I don't think statistically it looked amazing, but he did get it done in a lot of areas. He was pretty accurate. He was able to make plays outside of the structure of the offense. And then this one play that just immediately jumps in my mind was that play where I don't remember who it was, bust through the line and just have him wrapped. He squirms his way out, rolls to his left on a wide roll, and then just takes off and is able to extend the ball just enough for a 10-yard first down. And all I could think in my head was, man, that is the kind of play that just pumps your team up so much,
yeah,
and changes the momentum of a game, even though it's not a 40-yard pass or a crazy touchdown. Just that should have been a negative play, the end of that series, giving the ball back to the other team that you're trying to come back on. And instead, he just has this magic about him to make that kind of play. And the scary thing about him, from somebody who's going to watch his team play Joe Burrow for a couple years in a row, is that little bit of magic, I think, that is the part of a quarterback that is so hard to define outside of the statistics. And it's his ability to stay poised, his ability to stay cool, his ability to just make a play when it's the absolute most crucial times of a game. I don't know if we have a word for it.
The one thing I saw on that play, some people commenting on, which I think you would appreciate, Chad, is someone was talking about how after an ACL injury and with all of the rehab that you do, how much stronger you come back because of that rehab and building up strength in your legs, your core, based on exercises and things like that. And they were kind of talking about it in the way, like, actually, I'm not sure if he gets out of that sack the way he was able to kind of, he like bends down and just rips himself away from the sack, runs out to the side. I'm trying to find who was on that. The guy ended up coming back to tackle him while it was too late anyway. But I thought that was actually an interesting comment there. Like, hey, maybe if he doesn't spend his entire offseason training his legs, his core, building his strength up, maybe that's something he doesn't get out of, and it actually changes the course of the game.
Yeah. And I've heard that before and I've seen it. And the difference is some of the things you just brought up. You work on you get out of the game for a little while and you work on things like flexibility, balance, coordination in a way that you just haven't been able to take the time to do it. So you do get a little bit more agility and flexibility than you might have had because you're forced to, because that's some of the only things you can do while you're recovering. So yeah, that's a good point. It's kind of interesting to think of.
Speaking of knee injuries, real quick, I was just reading here on the Cincinnati official webpage here. Tight end CJ, and I might butcher this,
Uzomah.
He had a sprained MCL. that brutal looking injury apparently is a sprained MCL, and it says he may come back and play in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that's funny that you mentioned that, because the exact same report came out for Tyler Higbee, I believe. Was that hit? That might have been his injury. Did you guys hear that same thing?
No,
I guess it determines,
I don't
think
I was on the following Higbee.
Okay,
it determines like how big the game is. If this was a season, you'll probably miss, you know, the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. Yeah, it's the exact same injury. So we'll get to Higbee and the Rams. In the Rams portion, or we don't even need to, we can just cover it now.
I did see that the
MCL sprain can be played on. You just pain meds, you probably have a brace on, you might kinesio tape it or something so it feels a little bit more stable, but it is not an injury that's surgical. So as long as you can cut on it, then both of those guys will probably play. And it's pretty crazy because it's very painful when it happens, unlike an ACL tear, which isn't that painful. It snaps, it hurts for a second, and then you actually are probably okay. But it's really painful because of the blood flow to that tissue and the amount of nerves there. But in 2 weeks, yeah, you could definitely be wrapped up and get back out there. It might not be as effective, but I thought that was really crazy that both tight ends might get to come back and play.
Uzomah had some big-time catches for Burrow. I mean, he's a big guy, and that would also be helpful for them because they were really hoping to, and I think it just got announced today on the first, that Auden Tate for the Bengals was not able to get back from IR. They had placed him there. I think it was sometime around the beginning of December, who just another one of their wide receivers who had a quietly good season. He's not Higgins or Chase, obviously, but another weapon for Burrow that I think they were hoping to get back, and it doesn't look like they were able to get him off IR today.
Right.
But so well, Uzomah would definitely be helpful.
TJ Uzomah-Zoe. Do you guys remember that commercial?
Yes, very much.
That's what I was thinking of when you were talking about pronouncing it. I was like, Uzomah-Zoe. And then last take obviously is overtime. Are the overtime rules totally fine all of a sudden?
No. I don't like the overtime rules.
I just gonna say, Mike, I think it's Mike Greenberg immediately posted, I don't hear anything about the overtime rules being a problem this week. Yeah. And all I could think of in my head was, yeah, of course, because in this one example out of 10, pretty much, the defense was able to make a play. And by the way, barely, if that player doesn't get out there and knock that ball just enough for somebody else to get it and good heads up on play on them, the Chiefs would have been right there in scoring range already after just one play. And so, no, the overtime rule, in my opinion, isn't fixed. What do you think, Chip? Are you okay with it now that you've seen one team come back for it, or are you still a little skeptical?
No, I'm definitely still skeptical.
I think it's a great one, but
I think there's a lot of stuff in there I like. I don't know how to solve it, but I just don't like the we score a touchdown, it's over rule.
I think that it's a coin flip is a problem.
That is the problem. That's why I like and my suggestion from last week.
I'm okay with it's tough because I get the argument of like, well, your defense shouldn't let them score. It's hard for me to argue against that. I think one of the ones that I know, I think like some coaches have posed it, which it stays the same, but it changes enough that I think it helps coaches, is you do the coin flip before the game for overtime. And it seems trivial, but if you're going into the end of the game, you have very different decisions to make in how you're going to manage the clock and deal with whether you're going to go for it or play. Like, are you playing for a tie for overtime if you know the other team gets the ball? No, you go for two to end the game, yeah, right? Like, you don't kick extra points. I think it's been proposed before by like coaches or things like that. It's obviously not my suggestion. It's way too smart, but I think it at least changes. It changes the coaching at the end of the game enough to where you're making like real decisions and you're making decisions to win the game. Like you play to win the game, not like we play for a coin flip. Like, we already flipped the coin.
Like I said before, if the teams are equal enough in the playoffs to play to overtime, then whatever the overtime rule should be somewhere around 50-50, either of those teams winning it. And the fact that 85% of the coin toss teams win it is still too much in favor of that for me.
Well,
what do you think?
I think the one I liked the most so far was, and I think it was you, Chad, who brought it up in the group text, was there is no coin toss or deciding who gets the ball. It's just add 5 minutes to the clock and keep going. To your point, Dale, it adds an element of decision-making before the end of the game that you're not basing it off a coin flip. Now I know this ties the game, how am I going to handle this last, the end of this game here?
And that's a great point, because that matches what Dale said. Are you gonna be playing for a field goal to tie it if you know the clock's going to continue and the other team's going to get it? You might be much more enthusiastic about trying to get in the end zone and actually win it in regulation. So that's a good point.
I think that's whatever the solution is, even if it's overtime starts and nothing changes, you just add time. You don't change field position. You don't change who has the ball. and next score wins, it, like that, that's still very different from,
yeah,
from 5 minutes, start over, kickoff, whatever. But whatever it is, make people choose how the game is going to end from a coaching perspective. Make them go for it. Right. I mean, if you have some of that information ahead of time, even in the Bengals game before, or I'm sorry, not the Bengals, the Bills Chiefs game.
Right. Right.
Well, wait a second. Bills are going for two, right? Like, no, a field goal doesn't tie it. I don't want this to end in a tie. And what, like, you just had so much more interest to,
yeah, yeah, I'm sorry, of drama.
You add some incentive to end the game.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think everybody will, I think somebody will always be mad because somebody's going to come out the loser. But I think if it's clear cut, like you said, and you scheme for that, it's very different than if you feel like you kind of got screwed by chance in a game where chance is involved, but there's so many skilled guys doing things throughout the whole game that you don't want it to come down to something.
Like you said, 80, I think it was like 83 or 86%.
Yeah.
Win on a coin flip. Like,
that's too much.
Nope.
Even with the Bengals win.
But to clarify, it was postseason coin flips, not
right. Regular season was 50-50.
Because I know there's somebody listening.
Yeah, regular season's about 50-50.
So thank you for.
Yeah, which surprised me, but we talked about it last week, and we basically just decided in the postseason offenses are it's just the most elite offenses, which means you definitely have a really good shot. And in the regular season, it might be bad offenses playing each other, but the postseason you just that's where it changes. So I don't even care if the rule just changes for the postseason; it's not an appropriate rule for the postseason. So, despite that fact, the Bengals overcame it, and they are on their way to Super Bowl. Congratulations to Cincinnati fans. Ugh, I do not look forward to getting pestered by you for the next who knows how many years. Hopefully just next year until the Browns go to the Super Bowl. And moving on, the Rams and the 49ers in what looked to be a 50-50, if not slightly a home game advantage for the 49ers at SoFi Stadium.
A lot of red when they were kicking field goals. I don't know.
A lot of red. I saw a lot of 49ers Twitter.
They zoomed in on those.
I think they faked it. I think the cameras faked it by showing a lot of the lower decks, which were very green. But then they would show an overhead view of the stadium. And it was like, oh, that is a sea of red at a quote-unquote home playoff game. So I won't get as much into this as we did the Bengals game. But I think it was sort of the opposite story. This time the Rams looked like they were in control, right, for most of that game. But it was the 49ers who weren't quite ready to back off.
I mean, if only Debo Samuel could play quarterback, he'd just cover their entire offense. I felt so bad for that guy. The effort he puts into the game, what doesn't he do on offense? He's everything except quarterback.
He is awfully terrific as a playmaker, and I don't even know what position. We kind of talked about it. He's taken a bulk of carries, not even really from the running back position, but he is just all over the field. And you're right, he is maybe one of the best pure weapons in the entire NFL right now, and it's probably going to stay that way for a couple of years. He just looks great, and the 49ers defense also looked great. They had a handful of chances, including that Joquiski Tart dropped ball that could have gotten them into the Super Bowl.
I'm trying to think of someone that I feel worse for.
It was tough. And he's a tremendous player and is not going to define his career, probably.
Right, that's a good point. That's a good point.
It won't define his career, but it's going to be something that is going to get shown a lot and it's going to haunt him this offseason, because that team would have had a shot had he come down with that. And it was there, and he's too good to.
The offense went through him.
He didn't lose the game.
No, certainly not.
Someone else did that. So let's,
Jimmy G.
Okay, so let's say, why don't we go that direction? So
you know what's? I did read a funny, not funny, a stat about Jimmy G and Shanahan, and it's similar to Baker and Stefanski. Fourth quarter, these guys cannot pull a fourth quarter out of their ass. They have to be playing with a big lead into the fourth quarter, or they don't win.
And he even struggled. Jimmy G even struggled last week. It's one of those situations like we talked about. He just seems like his team just keeps winning, but it's hard to give him so much credit for the wins because he doesn't do the things that make you believe he led to that win. This is two games in a row where his completion percentage was just over 50%, and that's not good. He didn't have a huge number of yards, which I don't always look into a lot because sometimes you just, you know, don't have the passing stats of your opponent, but he threw the ball 30 times, and to have 230 total passing yards is rough. And then I don't want to say that that interception was terrible because I think in the position they were in, there
you
wasn't.
Never, you never was go desperate. Full Wentz. He went. You just can't do it. And he went full Carson Wentz.
That was a Brandon Whedon type of a play if I've ever seen it. But like I said, I'm trying not to kill him for that because I really do think that was a pretty desperate moment where he was probably thinking, if I go down here, the game's over. So maybe if I can make any miracle play, we still have a chance, you know?
But. Yeah, I mean, I get it, but yeah, it's tough. I've always been he's not as bad as people make it seem. He is, though. Like,
yeah. You laugh, but it's he has good statistics in terms of like he typically is pretty accurate. He usually takes care of the ball.
I have the verbiage to make it sound good.
Okay, let's hear it.
He has good efficiency metrics. He's an efficient quarterback.
Yeah.
Is he
the definition of what people are talking about when they say a game manager? Sort of sounds like it. Right.
Yeah, I mean that's why I mean, I think the whole fantasy football community was like killing the 49ers all year long. Like, what are you doing? You have Trey Lance. Like, you mortgaged your future to get the guy with the highest possible upside. And you're playing the guy with the, I don't even want to say highest floor, but maybe it's the highest floor. Like, low, at least the closest floor to ceiling. They are very, very close with Jimmy G. And yeah, like he typically doesn't like lose you games or screw it up, and that. But
he doesn't did offer sort of.
He doesn't offer the upside, and as laughing about the whole Mina Kimes thing. I don't know if either of you saw that, but she appropriately called out that like the 49ers won their two games before this with Jimmy G, not because of Jimmy G, but they won it with him. And it was very appropriate. I thought it was actually a pretty generous way to say it.
Yeah.
Because
it was better than despite.
Yeah. Which also I think would have been fair. Yeah. So yeah, you were going to have that. And then Jeff Garcia got sad as soon as the 49ers lost and deleted his Twitter account.
Yeah, I heard that he got canceled this weekend. That's a super shame for me.
I just thought it was funny that as soon as they lost the game, he made his IG account private and then on Monday morning deleted Twitter. Like,
hey, that's a I heard a I lot of tweets.
I think
this
it's
weekend.
A win for all of us.
I heard a lot of tweets this weekend or saw a lot of tweets this weekend saying Baker Mayfield got off social media at the right time because it was right before, you know.
Well, just like a lot of people, he saw it coming. I mean.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, let's get out of here. And I think Jeff Garcia was probably like, okay, and I'm going to go tuck away right now. So So the Rams came out, scored, I think, pretty early. I can't remember the exact breakdown. I was just kind of
Looks like the Rams didn't get their first score until the second quarter.
Second quarter.
Scored everything in the fourth quarter.
Cooper Kupp, right? So I think Cooper Kupp scored 2 touchdowns this game. He had a tremendous game.
He had 2 TDs.
He was the best wide receiver in the league this year. I mean, he just statistically and in the regular season, in the playoffs, he has just been outstanding. The dude is a beast.
He's the best receiver on that team.
Yeah, and it opened room for Odell. I think Odell had a 100-yard game. I don't remember the exact numbers, and I easily can block that out. But he
combined, they had an absurd.
Yeah, they were just outstanding. And I think we brought it up on the last podcast, with Cooper Kupp being so darn good, it allows Odell Beckham to be, you know, it's hard to argue he's not one of the better second receivers, if not the best second receiver in the league right now. Like, what a great role for him as not the guy getting extra attention. And, you know, the farther you get away from a surgery, the more into it you get. So I'm not super shocked. I think a lot of us saw it coming that he was still a big playmaker. But Cooper Kupp with 2 scores, sort of as usual, led this team through. And then just the late surge in the fourth quarter of their defense making stops and then being able to, you know, get the lead again on that tart drop could have been the difference in the defining playoff for Matt Stafford, because if, you know, he throws an interception in clutch time and the 49ers move on to the Super Bowl which, by the way, is just an incredible thing to even think about. Bengals 49ers again in the Super Bowl, which just would have been absolutely insane. For people that don't know, am I correct on this? Didn't the Bengals lose to the 49ers both times they made the Super Bowl in the past?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think I'm right. I know they did in 89, and I think they did. It had been before we were born, but in either 80 or 81, and that just would have been an incredible story, and it almost happened. But it really did change the narrative that now Stafford was able to lead his team back after giving up a lead and, you know, just enough to get his team into field goal range to win that game. And now, you know, he has got that Detroit Lions curse lifted off his shoulder as he heads to the Super Bowl. And obviously with him going to Georgia and my fiance being a Georgia alum, she couldn't have been more excited for him. And I know that, you know, we all want to hate Odell right now after the story that came out where he, you know, told Von Miller, you know, probably don't go to Cleveland, I'm going to get out of there. But I just tried to wash that in the back. I did that. The Rams were able to pull this off. What a story of 2 franchises, one built almost strictly through free agency by trading, like, what, 4 to 6 first round picks to just build a winner, and the other one basically falling to the bottom of the league with 2 wins and starting over with a quarterback and building around him in a 2-year period to get.
Yeah, it's a good point. You got opposite, like, LA Rams are all in this year. They didn't make it this year. They're gonna fall apart here real fast.
They've been all in the last couple of years. Like you said, I don't think they have a first round till 27.
Yeah. They are just completely 26. All in, where the Bengals are kind of like, oh, we just drafted really well and we have some good young players. Get ready to stick around and watch this for a while.
Yeah. Yep. And it's different because you're right. The Bengals were there before they were supposed to, and the Rams were there, you know, a couple of years ago and then doubled down to make sure they could get back there. So it's going to be a really interesting Super Bowl, and we'll cover that matchup going in next week. But what a wonderful weekend of football. And man, it, you know, for me, go Rams. It's one of those things where I know enough Bengals fans that aren't going to give me shit for the rest of my life, that if they win, I'll just be sort of happy for them and just hope that we can create a little bit of a Ohio rivalry with it. But if the Rams win, Katie and I will be pretty pumped up. So it's kind of a, you know, a win or a meh type of a week coming up for us in 2 Sundays.
Hey, so, you know what I just thought of? Is sports gambling illegal in Oklahoma? Oh, I'll have to look that up. I can no legally idea. Place a bet on this game because in Ohio, it's still not clear yet.
Not till next January or later?
No, this March.
Okay.
I was told, well, not, excuse me, not like I speak to the mayor myself. I heard on the radio, let me clarify, I heard on the radio that it was supposed to be ready before March Madness.
Okay,
so
yeah.
It's, ooh, not, that'd be still, it's still not ready yet. So I might want to drop my bet before I leave Oklahoma. But
okay, you have to check it out.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to root for the Bengals, but put money on the Rams so that either way I win. Tired of always losing.
Yeah, there's you gotta set up a way where you can't fail.
Right.
Okay. So this makes a little bit of repeat history, because last year the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were able to be the first team to play in their own home stadium for a Super Bowl, and now the Rams will be the second team in 2 years to play in their own home stadium.
You know what's funny? You bring that up. I had just had this conversation with my dad, and of all the things in the world for him to complain about, out of nowhere, he's like, you know what makes me mad? The second year in a row, someone gets to play the home field advantage in the Super Bowl. I'm like that's what's bothering you right now, Dad. I'm
like, that's with your dad. There is no way in hell's heavens that the Cincinnati Bengals do not have more fans at the Super Bowl at SoFi Stadium
absolutely
than the Rams. There is no way I believe
the
that.
The problem is that the stadium is – it's such a neutered crowd, right? Like, the stadium is rich people. Like, the cheapest ticket is $5,600 last I saw it today. It is rich people. It is not local fans. And, like, 40% of it is, like, Visa executives.
Yeah. Yeah,
and Pepsi executives. Yeah. Like, it's,
that is a big thing. It's a lot of NFL employees, players.
There's going to be people there with like Packers jerseys and like,
yeah,
it's
funny thing.
It's
to think
so
of it
weird,
the crowd.
But also cool hearing former players talk about it, like what the crowd is like and the break and everything. But
the other crazy irony is that because the NFC team got the home field last year and it swaps each year, the AFC team automatically is considered the home team. So in SoFi Stadium in 2 weeks, the Cincinnati Bengals are technically going to be marked as the home team, and they'll be doing the opening coin toss. So I thought that was kind of a weird, fun fact.
I like that.
So moving on from that, we got a Super Bowl preview next week. So moving on from that, we're just going to hit a couple off-season topics, a real quick thumbs up, thumbs down on some of the Browns free agents and cap stuff coming up, so that when we get into future Browns coverage, we'll have a little better idea. We'll roll back to it, but we'll have a little better idea of what our positions of need, how the team breaks down, because it's hard to keep up with, you know, this team was great, they need this position and this position, but you sometimes forget how many people might be leaving and what positions on every team kind of pop up surprisingly. Before we move on that, some kind of big breaking news is in the NFL. Number one, we just wanted to touch on, there is a huge Brian Flores lawsuit going on right now with the NFL. And I don't want to get much into the case because, as Chip had brought up to me earlier, it is a racially based case and nobody really wants to hear three young white guys' opinion on, you know, what this guy feels is, you know, a racially discriminating case. And we don't have any kind of real inside info or legal knowledge or perspective. So we just don't have a lot to give at this point, but it's definitely worth following. That I wanted to bring up was the part that I found just too crazy to talk about, was that this opened up from a text message. And if you didn't see it, you have to look it up, from Bill Belichick to Brian Flores, accidentally congratulating him on getting the Giants job.
Whew. Gotta realize which one of your ex-assistants named Brian you are texting.
Yeah, essentially.
Otherwise,
if
you
didn't
may
hear,
start a federal lawsuit.
And if anybody didn't hear, essentially what he did was he sent a text congratulations, Coach Brian, on, you know, grabbing that Giants job. I'm hearing from, and I'll just paraphrase it, I'm hearing from the Bills and the Giants that you're their man. and Brian Flores, who was the actual recipient of this text, after one or two back and forth, said...
Who had not interviewed for the job yet.
Yeah, his interview is coming up still in 2 days. Basically responded with, did you mean to text me or Brian Daboll? And Bill Belichick answered with, oops, sorry, wrong Brian. Sorry about that. My mistake. BB. From Bill Belichick, which is what he puts on the end of all his text and signatures, which, by the way, because is such an old man thing to do.
That has a signature. Such an old man
thing to do. Is like,
we all have an aunt or an uncle who has one of those.
I hope you're doing well. Love, Aunt Betty. Like, thanks for clarifying. But wow, what an insane story. You know, we'll see what comes of it. This may be something that takes a really, really long time to get to the bottom of. But I just thought the text messages getting released was like, this can't be real life. That's like accidentally texting like the wrong girl about something that you are doing tonight. Or, and it's like, oh, did you mean to text this Ashley? Or
we were hanging out tomorrow.
Yeah. Which Ashley are you texting? You're like, uh-oh. But yeah, big mistake.
So, one thing I just wanted to bring up real quick for Brian Flores is,
yeah,
let's just go over this real quick. Last year, he was up for Coach of the Year.
Correct? I think he's a tremendous coach. Yeah.
You could argue he was better coach than Kevin Stefanski, considering the team he had and players that left him or left the team. This year, he was 9-8. He was still over 500. Possibly.
First time since 2003 that the Dolphins won more games than they lost 2 years in a row.
Correct.
Wow. Since 03.
And
that was the year I graduated high school.
That's where I'm going with this. How do you fire a coach with back-to-back winning records, coach of the year candidate?
I think the most salacious thing that was included in all of it was that per Brian Flores, that he was offered by the owner of the Dolphins, Stephen Ross, $100,000 per game that he lost. And he's like, no, thank you. I'm going to win football games. This is my job. And apparently the owner was not super thrilled with that, because in his first year, he won all those games and them to win any games.
Yeah, no, there were two instead of Burrow.
I don't follow the Dolphins that closely, but I know there were players bailing on the Dolphins, and he still came out and won all those games. I was very impressed. And with that, I thought he actually had an edge. Yeah, I thought he had an edge on Kevin Stefanski for Coach of the Year.
Yeah, it was a close one. I think the Kevin Stefanski edged him based on how bad the Browns have been lately, and I think that was the kicker and how long it's been since they've been in the playoffs. But you're right, it was tight. And I thought, given the circumstances, I totally agree with you. I think he did a really nice job with the players that he was given, with some of the injuries and changes and drama at the quarterback position. And I just think we'll see where this leads him. But I had him easily written in as my number one head coaching candidate, because I just think he has a proven record of knowing how to get things done with whatever players you hand to him.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing to see. I mean, all the reports the last couple of weeks were just like, hey, it was a philosophy difference. The GM and the coach, it just wasn't working, and the owner chose the GM. Well, that happens. That's not surprising. And it's interesting to see some of the national folks talk about him, his potential to get a job this hiring cycle. That doesn't happen. If you get fired from a job, like,
yeah,
in the NFL,
you're
a head
coordinator,
coach, usually it takes years to get back. If you're lucky, maybe you take your gap year and go to PFF and hang out for a couple of minutes, and you've learned the ways of analytics, and now you're hireable again. But like, he was immediately being talked about, like, and a few folks, just the national folks, are like, man, you know who could really use someone like him? The Dolphins. they could use someone yeah. like him. So it's and there's still openings now. So it's going to be really interesting to see what comes out of it. If I had to take a guess, here's my guess as to what happens is the NFL settles something, and whatever comes, something will come out of it. But I would bet my house on at no point will the NFL be in court facing discovery ever on anything.
Probably not. You're probably right.
It doesn't matter if they believe they were in the right or the wrong or anything, but they will never go to discovery in court ever.
Well, moving on from Belichick right to his former superstar quarterback, Tom Brady officially retires from the NFL this week. He's re-signing with the Patriots a one-day contract, and he'll retire a Patriot. Au revoir to Tom Terrific. And I, appreciate the greatness and the amount of winning, and I am so burnt out on it that, unlike a lot of people who will miss him, I will appreciate that I was actually around to watch that happen, but I kind of am ready to move on. I don't know about you guys.
I mean, it's going to be one of those things that kind of years from now, like talking to your grandkids, nephews, whatever, like, yeah, I got to watch him do that. Like, that's probably going to be one of the guys for us. It'll be LeBron. It'll be him, Tiger. It is weird. I really did not expect it. I know some others did, just based on the way he had been talking about family and some other things recently. If he played next year, it really wouldn't surprise me. Still feel robbed not getting the farewell tour. But, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, he's got all the Super Bowls. He went to, 40-something percent of his seasons played. He went to the Super Bowl.
The numbers are outrageous for him on every front.
But he has no playoff wins against the Browns, though. So, I mean, you got to ding him there for that.
Yeah, you want to know what? Two quarterbacks have retired in the last week from the NFL who are both Hall of Famers, and you realize neither of them have ever beat the Browns in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, everyone has their blemish on their careers, but it's...
I'm sure they wake up every morning for the rest of their retired career thinking, man, if I just had one shot against the Browns,
Dale, to your, he didn't get a playoff, or I'm sorry, a farewell tour. I don't think Tommy wanted a farewell tour. I think this is how Tom wants it. Tom doesn't want to be recognized as someone that's leaving the game. I think Tommy just was like, one day I'm going to tell him I'm done, and that's the end of it. I'm not going to do every game is my farewell tour. Like, that's not his style. His style is to be a competitor and to play at the highest level. I'm not going to come out here with any sympathy games. I just want to one day just say, you know what? I'm hanging up my helmet. And that's what he did, and I think he was pretty mad about someone trying to break the news before he did, and that's why you got all that.
Definitely.
I think Tommy wanted to break it. I like to call him Tommy, like we're close friends.
Well, yeah, of course. one of my favorite things was I don't know if either of you saw Jalen Ramsey tweeted out that Tom Brady's last touchdown was against him, which I thought was pretty great.
Yeah, if you're gonna have history, even if it's on the back. Including Tom Brady, you feel pretty okay about it, I think.
And you know what? If he had a pick six to end the Super Bowl in a couple weeks, it wouldn't surprise any of us either. So
yeah, last thing he's probably worried about at this point in his career. But it is a nice thing to say, like, yeah, Tom Brady threw a touchdown at me. Like, that's a pretty cool thing if you're pretty confident in yourself.
I think Mike Evans also threw that touchdown ball, his last touchdown, into the stands. So Mike Evans just kind of killing Brady.
Oh, gosh. I didn't hear that story, but I believe it.
Oh, man, that's a bummer. It's going to cost him so much money just to get balls back throughout this year. So moving off Brady, which is he deserves an entire podcast, and somebody's going to do it. It's not going to be us. But, man, I mean, There's no career better. But moving off
well said.
Brady to another related quarterback, who was supposed to be his protege and replacement, Jimmy Garoppolo, I just thought I'd bring up, is very likely now done with the 49ers. I saw reports today that the 49ers and Garoppolo agreed that both sides will look for a trade partner for him. And I believe he has, what we talked about, 1 year left on his deal. So I don't know.
I mean, we expected that unless they won the Super Bowl, right? Like, that was the...
I don't think Jim did. He's not here to defend himself, but I think he thought if Jimmy G got him this far, he's a lock to come back. Why move on? But I think I'm with you. No, I thought this was just done. Yeah, I thought this was
done. And since he can't defend himself, I'm confident in saying that.
What an idiot. So I know he doesn't listen to this podcast, so we can say whatever we want about him. What a loser. But he's apparently on the market. I don't know why that story would be fake, or why people, you know, some NFL guys would be putting that out there if it wasn't looking to be true. And it makes sense.
I think he had actually commented on it as well, to some extent. Okay. Like, he had actually, he made a comment to a reporter, I want to say yesterday.
So we are coming to the end here, and I wanted to just cover just
real quick, in speaking of Jimmy G, there's a chance we play him two times a year, right?
I don't know.
What, you think he's going to the Steelers?
I mean,
yes, he could. Wow.
They don't have an NFL quarterback on their team right now. I mean, technically they have two, but...
Yeah, they don't have either that can play to Jimmy G's level, especially with... They have the type of team with the defense they have in the running game to think maybe we can plug in Jimmy G and do what the 49ers did with
they
him.
They do not call it whatever you want, but they don't do that, and they're never going to.
Yeah, they don't drop to the bottom. That's for sure. We'll see. We have a lot of Jimmy G talk to get to, because we're going to do quarterback trackers and all sorts of things, because Chip isn't going to let us just move through the offseason without every scenario possible. So we will talk some Jimmy G to the Browns and to the Steelers coming up. I didn't realize how many teams were looking for a quarterback after this year. So he's going to find a place somewhere. And on that note, one of them may come out of the draft. And if that player does, he may be at the Senior Bowl this week. We don't have coverage on that right now because today was their first practice. But keep an eye out on Senior Bowl coverage. I found out today, fun fact, 89% of the players in the Senior Bowl end up on an NFL roster week one of the season, which I guess I can get, but I would have never thought. I think I overlooked the fact that a lot of the superstar, I'm going to be picked in the top 20 guys, just decide not to do the Senior Bowl, and then there's so many juniors in the draft that I sort of forget how impactful these players in the Senior Bowl are. But just keep that in mind, is, you know, 90% of the players almost are going to be playing in the NFL.
They're not day one or day two guys, but you know who is there at this?
Like, Kenny Pickett's there. Like,
you know who is there at these games?
Yeah, some quarterbacks and running backs might be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would agree with that. But what my point was, before you guys both cut me off, was that, you know who is at these games? Coaching staffs of the NFL teams that can get their hands and eyes on these players in an appropriate way, that they can, you know, see what they're drafting. And that helps.
Yeah.
Chemistry
for sure.
Right. I mean, like the Jets coaching staff are coaching. Like, NFL coaches are actually coaching these teams. Like, it's not.
I'm pretty sure the Bengals coached these teams just a few 2 years ago. So
Sam Hubbard
relevant.
Played. Yeah.
Yeah, it's relevant to these guys. So we'll be covering that after the game happens at the end of the week. Practice is important, the game's important. And to Chip's point, the top 10 guys that you probably know about probably aren't going to be there, but there's going to be a ton of guys who are impactful NFL players who are picked all over the draft that are there. So,
and this is the first time a lot of those guys at smaller schools are going to get to show off against guys in Power Five conferences.
And if you've made it this far in the podcast, I know I haven't given you a list of anybody to follow, but follow me in the defensive line and Devontae Wyatt, Georgia Bulldog, number 95, defensive lineman. That's who I'm going to have my eyes on the most, but defensive line is where I'm going to be watching this offseason the most.
All right. And you guys know how Chip loves his underdog players. You know how Chip loves his incoming prospects. So get ready as this offseason builds up and after the Super Bowl is over, that you're going to be hearing things like Chip's unknown prospect of the week, or we're going to end up getting like, so we'll see.
You will know the most underdog stories. Don't worry, you're not going to miss one. I follow them all. I'm the biggest sucker for an underdog story.
So
I love them all.
So we have our Super Bowl preview next week, and I think we were supposed to get to some Brown stuff today, but you know, we just got going and having a lot of fun with some of these games and stories. So we're going to call it quits here, but we will, I promise we will get to the Browns upcoming free agents and cap stuff next week, along with some really fun information about building a Super Bowl team and, you know, what statistics keep creeping up for teams that make it to and win the Super Bowl that you'll want to hear next week. It's going to be a good one. And then I promise we'll finally get into Browns football. I keep coming back to that idea that I don't know who, was it Jim that texted me or was it you, Chip, that was like, I really just don't want my week of football in my podcast ruined by talking about the Browns.
I think that was more.
If you don't have anything nice to say, sometimes you just don't say anything at all.
Sometimes it's better just to huddle into a hole for two or three weeks until you forget how terrible that season ended, and then you can have some fun talking about it again.
I also found myself being bitter Browns fan and hiding in a hole, but
and it's fine. I just think in your head, like if you're not feeling it, like it's just more fun right now to talk about the Bengals and the Rams. So that's what we did. But we will get into the Browns because it's gonna be off season time soon. I keep wanting to do it deep down, but I just keep getting distracted by the fact that there's still football. And one day, yes, I hope my team will be the one we're talking about at this point. So before we go, do not forget to hit us up on social media. We're on Instagram and on Twitter at Coast, the number 2, Coast X3, Coast to Coast times 3 on both platforms. We just got active on Twitter this week, and it is a nightmare. So get on there, follow us, and bail us out because – it is just a ridiculous war on Twitter, and we're going to try to stick it out, but it's brutal out there. So follow us, Coast, the number 2, Coast X3, and like and subscribe to the podcast. We could really use the continued support. We appreciate everybody out there listening. And I guess here's to another week.
Cheers, fellas.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Thanks for tuning in.